Have you made your preparation for a journey to the city on a train that's bound for glory by and by? Better get your reservation for the glorious vacation in that home prepared where we will never die. Well, 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 get on board, children. Get on board, I say. Get on board, children. You better hurry, don't delay. This train is bound for glory. Don't carry nothing but the righteous and the holy. Get on board, children.
Children,
get on board today. In that home we'll live forever, on the banks beside the river, with my loved ones there who left this world below. God will be there with a welcome when we pull into the station. Have your ticket ready when it's time to go. Well, 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 get on board, children. Get on board, I say. Get on board, children. You better hurry, don't delay. This train is bound for glory. Don't carry nothing but the righteous and the holy. Get on board, children.
Children,
get on board today. Well, 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 get on board, children. Get on board, I say. Get on board, children. You better hurry, don't delay. This train is bound for glory. Don't carry nothing but the righteous and the holy. Get on board, children.
Children,
get on board, children.
Children,
get on board, children.
Children,
get on board today.
It is time for another Bible lesson brought to you by the Hamilton Church of Christ. Time, one of man's most precious commodities. How little time we have. How we use it is so important. The Bible cautions us to redeem the time. That is, we are not to waste our time. This is especially true of time spent in the saving of our souls. So, let's take some of this precious time now and spend it together in an examination of the Word of God and endeavor to learn the simple truth that is intended for man to know. No better use can be made of our time than in learning about God and His ways. Won't you join us in this short study today? Each of these lessons is available free on cassette tape. For your free copy of any of these lessons presented on this program, please contact me, Dr. N.C. Crouch, Hamilton, Texas.
Shine on for Jesus, shine brightly every day.
I'm telling you,
shine on for Jesus, He'll show you the way. Shine on for Jesus, through good times and bad. Shine on for Jesus, He's the best friend you ever had.
Well, when it seems your burdens are too much to bear, when you start believing that no one really cares, when you think you're suffering, it's nothing all but strife, just remember this, my friend, that Jesus gave His life.
Shine on for Jesus, shine brightly every day.
I'm telling you,
shine on for Jesus, He'll show you the way. Shine on for Jesus, through good times and bad. Shine on for Jesus, He's the best friend you ever had.
Well, if your heart is bolted shut, it needs to be set free. Jesus will unlock it, He holds the master key. So when you feel Him tugging up on your heartstrings, let Him in and worship Jesus, King of Kings.
Shine on for Jesus, shine brightly every day.
I'm telling you,
shine on for Jesus, He'll show you the way.
Yeah,
shine on for Jesus, through good times and bad. Shine on for Jesus, He's the best friend you ever had. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Every day I'll let my little light shine. Hide it under a bushel,
no.
I'm gonna let it shine. Hide it under a bushel,
no.
I'm gonna let it shine. Hide it under a bushel,
no.
I'm gonna let it shine. Every day I'll let my little light shine. Jesus gave me the light. I'm gonna let it shine. Jesus gave me the light. I'm gonna let it shine. Jesus gave me the light. I'm gonna let it shine. Every day I'll let my little light shine.
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Every day I'll let my little light shine. Shine on, shine on, shine on, shine on.
Let your light shine on.
We're now in the midst of the 18th chapter of Acts. Paul is working in the city of Corinth. He has Timothy and Silas working with him. This is the midst of his second great journey to the Gentiles. And they've established a church here in this city of Corinth, even though this is a very wicked and worldly city. Paul is here for a year and 6 months teaching the Word of God among them. And finally, the Jews, in an effort to try to get rid of Paul, in an effort to try to discredit the church, when a man named Gallio was made the deputy of Achaia, they made an insurrection with one accord against Paul. They caused an uprising. They caused some kind of a tumult, what we might term as a riot. And they brought him to the judgment seat. That is, they brought him to the court before this man Gallio, before the deputy. And the charge was that this fellow persuadeth men to worship God contrary to the law. They were charging that Paul was now breaking the law, not only the law of the Jews, but also the law of the Romans. And so verse 14 says, and when Paul was now about to open his mouth, Paul was just going to defend himself. He was always ready to defend himself. Gallio said unto the Jews, if it were a matter of wrong or wicked lewdness, O ye Jews, reason would I that I should bear with you. But if it be a question of words and names and of your law, look ye to it, for I'll be no judge of such matters. Now Gallio understood very plainly that Paul hadn't broken the law of the Romans. This was a matter of the Jewish law. It was a matter of how the Jews interpreted his actions, and he wasn't going to get involved in that. It wasn't a place for the Roman law to be involved in settling a question among the Jews. And so he said, it's a question of words and names and of your law. It was a question of whether or not this man called Jesus was the Messiah. To Gallio, to an outsider, this looked like words and names. It looked like something that was so picayunish that he didn't have any need to spend his time at it. I'll be no judge of such matters. And verse 16 says, and he drave them from the judgment seat. He wouldn't hear the case any further. He wouldn't let the Jews bring their charge anymore in this Roman court. He drove them from the judgment seat. Verse 17, then all the Greeks took Sosthenes, the chief ruler of the synagogue, and beat him before the judgment seat. Now, the Greeks would be those who were the other Romans, the Gentiles. These are not members of the church. These are those who were looking on and saw the tumult that had been brought about. They might have even participated in this riot themselves. When they saw that the Roman law wouldn't back them in it, the Roman law wouldn't back this Sosthenes, the chief ruler of the synagogue, then they turned on him. They beat him before the judgment seat. And this word beat doesn't mean that they gave him a legal beating with rods, but maybe that they beat him with their fists or some other instrument. But it was right there in the very presence of the judgment seat, the court, the law. And Gallio cared for none of those things. That is, Gallio let it happen. He didn't want to get involved in it. Maybe he felt that this was something that Sosthenes deserved to have, to bring up such a tumult and to cause all of this uproar in the city, to cause him to have to come down and sit on the judgment seat and try a case that really didn't have any valid merit to it. And so he felt like this would be a good lesson once and for all for those Jews. So he cared for none of those things. That is, he simply allowed it to happen. He did not interfere. Now, it's interesting to note that when Paul wrote the first letter to the Corinthians, in 1 Corinthians 1, verse 1, in the introduction to that letter, he says, Paul, called to be an apostle of Jesus Christ, through the will of God, and Sosthenes our brother, unto the church of God which is at Corinth. Here he names a man that he calls Sosthenes our brother. And so there's a very good chance that this very same Sosthenes, who was so opposed him at this time, in Acts 18, this Sosthenes, who was the chief ruler of the synagogue, later became a convert to the Christian faith, later became a member of the church. Not only that, but he was a co-worker with Paul and was with him as he wrote the letter to the to the Corinthians, known as the First Corinthians. Verse 18, "And Paul after this tarried there yet a good while, and then took his leave of the brethren, and sailed thence into Syria, and with him Priscilla and Aquila, having shorn his head in Cenchreae, for he had a vow." So he tarried yet a good while at Corinth. He had a church established here, a church that needed him, and he spent a lot of time with them. They had a lot of problems, but nevertheless it was a viable church. We don't know how large it was, but evidently it had some good size to it. And so he spent a lot of time with them. And as we know, he wrote at least two other letters back to them. We even believe a third letter we don't have a record of. He made other visits back to them. He sent messengers to them in the form of Timothy. So he had a lot of contact with this church. But he took his leave of the brethren. There came a time when he found it necessary to leave. He needed to press on to other duties, to other areas, to other jobs of spreading the gospel. And so he sailed thence into Syria. That is, he left the area of Corinth and went over to Syria. We're going to learn that his purpose was to go to Jerusalem and there to keep the feast that we're going to have at Jerusalem, which is commonly thought to be the feast of the Passover. But as we read about him going into Syria, or leaving for Syria, he took with him Priscilla and Aquila. These were his two co-workers. They were fellow tent makers like Paul was. They were also members of the church. They were Jews, and they'd been expelled from Rome, or Italy, by a decree of Caesar. And this is the very reason they were in Corinth to begin. Well, they left with him as he departed for Syria. Luke further says, having shorn his head in Cenchreae, he had a vow. Now, Cenchreae was the port on the eastern side of Corinth. And it's very interesting for us to note what he says here about this vow. He had a vow. A vow is a solemn promise made to God about anything. The use of vows is very noticeable throughout the scripture. And we can read of several cases of where vows were made. We read of a certain vow that could be taken, for example, in Deuteronomy 23, verse 21. When thou shalt vow a vow unto the Lord thy God, thou shalt not slack to pay it. The Lord thy God will surely require it of thee, and it would be sin in thee. But if thou forbear to vow, it shall be no sin in thee. So a vow was something that seemed to be a choice as to whether or not you could take a vow or not. And for some reason or other, Paul had taken a vow. We don't know what it was nor why it was. The most noted vow among the Jews was the vow known as that of the Nazarite, by which a man made a solemn promise to God to abstain from wine and from all intoxicating liquors, to let his hair grow, and not to enter into any house polluted by having a dead body in it, nor to attend any funeral. This vow generally lasted 8 days, sometimes a month, sometimes during a definite period fixed by themselves, and sometimes during their whole lives. But when the vow expired, the priest would make an offering, and then the priest or some other person would shave the head of the Nazarite at the door of the tabernacle, and they would burn the hair on the fire of the altar. Those who made the vow away from Palestine, where they could not get to the altar, they couldn't come to the temple when the vow was expired, and they would then observe the abstinence required by the law, and they'd cut off the hair wherever they were. And so we suppose this to have been the case with Paul. His hair was cut off at the time the vow expired when he was at Cenchreae. And Luke simply mentions this in passing as he talks about Paul with Priscilla and Aquila leaving Corinth and setting out for Syria. Verse 19 says, "And he came to Ephesus and left them there." That is, he came to Ephesus on his way to Syria, and he left Priscilla and Aquila at Ephesus. Now, Ephesus was a very prominent city. A church was established here. We have a letter to it known as the Letter to the Ephesians. We have also some strong teaching given to it in the book of Revelation, in Revelation chapter 2, verses 1 through 5. But Ephesus was a very famous city during its day. It was located in Ionia, in Asia Minor, about 40 miles south of Smyrna. It was chiefly famous for the Temple of Diana, usually considered to be one of the seven wonders of the world. Some historians have described Ephesus as being the ornament of Asia. In the times of the Romans, it was the metropolis of the province of Asia. And according to Josephus, The Jews were very numerous in Ephesus and had obtained the privilege of citizenship. So Paul left Priscilla and Aquila there. But we find that he himself entered into the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. He was going to be here a little while in the city, so he took advantage of that time. He went into the synagogue and tried to reason with the Jews. That is, he tried to discuss with them what his views were about religion, the Christian doctrine. Certainly he talked about the Messiah. He talked about the fact that the law pointed to the Messiah. He reasoned with the Jews. Verse 20, when they desired him to tarry longer time with them, he consented not. He didn't have time to stay any longer. He didn't have time to stay as long as they wanted him to even. But he bade them farewell, saying, I must by all means keep this feast that cometh in Jerusalem. Now, it doesn't name what the feast here, but it's generally considered that this was the Passover feast. When we ask ourselves the question, why was he so anxious to celebrate that feast at Jerusalem? And Luke has not informed us of this. But it is very probable that he wished to meet as many of his countrymen as possible. He wished to remove, if practicable, the prejudices which had been raised up against him. He wished to eliminate the doubts and the questions that had arisen about his ministry, about his going to the Gentiles. And so he may have supposed that there would be many Christian converts present there whom he might be able to meet. He also kept the law for the very purpose of demonstrating to the Jews that he was not opposed to the law, that he did not condemn them for keeping the law, but his only contention was that the law could not be used as something necessary for salvation. So he tells these people at Ephesus, I must by all means keep this feast that cometh in Jerusalem, but I will return again unto you if God will. I'm going to come back. We're not going to drop the matter here. There's much work to be done here. I'm going to come back and we're going to attend to this. And we do find that he did come back and stay some 3 years at Ephesus. And this was a city that became a very prominent church during this time. And so Luke says he sailed from Ephesus. And when he had landed at Caesarea and gone up and saluted the church, he went down to Antioch. Now the way this is worded here can be interpreted two different ways. He landed at Caesarea. That's the seacoast city on the coast of Palestine. It's about 60 miles or so from Jerusalem. And so it probably means when he landed at Caesarea and gone up and saluted the church that he went to Jerusalem and saluted the church there. Although he doesn't name the city of Jerusalem in this verse, we know that he was going to Jerusalem. You know that he said he must by all means keep the feast at Jerusalem. So he undoubtedly did that. And Luke just simply described it and had gone up and saluted the church. Every reference to Jerusalem is up. Every reference away from Jerusalem is down. So he'd gone up and saluted the church. He went to, that's where he went to make his contact in Jerusalem. He went to the church. This is what our interest and desire should be today. We should be interested in contacting the church, other members of the church. If we're in a place where there is a church, then we should be wanting to contact the church. We should be wanting to have some kind of association with the church. We should be wanting to assemble with the church. And when we're in places where there is no church, there are no person with common beliefs that we have. There are no person that we can consider to be in fellowship with the true church that Christ established. Only then would we not be seeking to go to the church. And that's what Paul did here. He went to Jerusalem and he saluted the church. Now, we don't know what all happened, what he said, how long he stayed. Luke doesn't say. He just briefly mentions this in passing. And then he went down to Antioch. Antioch was the city, you know, to the north. It was a city where a very prominent church of the Gentiles was established, although there were Jews there too. This was the place where Paul had begun his first journey and where he came when he finished it. This is the place he had begun his second journey. And now he's come there when he's finished it. And we're going to see that it'll be from this place that he'll leave when he begins his third journey to the Gentiles. Verse 23 says, and after he had spent some time there, he departed and went all over the country of Galatia and Phrygia in order, strengthening the disciples. We don't know how long he stayed at Antioch this time, but Luke says he spent some time there. Now, this was a place of very important work in the eyes of Paul. He did not neglect the work at Antioch. He'd been here before, and he'd been here for a good while before. So he spent some time there at this time. Then he departed and went over all the country of Galatia and Phrygia in order. Now, Galatia and Phrygia are provinces in Asia Minor. He'd been there before, and he's going back and revisiting these churches that had been established on his previous journeys. Luke says he's strengthening all the disciples. Galatia and Phrygia are in the high country. That is the upper plateau areas. They're not along the seacoast. They're not, but they're in the higher elevation of the mid part of that area of the country. We have a letter written to the Galatians. So this would be a letter including many of the churches in this very area. And he was strengthening all the disciples. That is, this was the main purpose of Paul, was to encourage the disciples, to strengthen them. And of course we know that the church, whatever age it is in, whatever state it's in, however large or small it is, it needs to be continually strengthened. The disciples need to strengthen each other. The disciples need spiritual food, spiritual meat. The disciples need to be encouraged, need to be urged on to their duty. And if we do not have this, it's very easy then for us to grow lax and to grow cold and indifferent and to actually endanger our souls by being put into a position of not being faithful. So this was the work of Paul. He strengthened all the disciples. And we must remember that one of our main works today is not only to establish congregations, but also to see that those congregations that are established have strength, have encouragement, have some kind of assistance from the standpoint of spiritual food. Verse 24 says, and we're beginning a little different subject at this time. We see now what Paul is doing. We leave Paul as he's in the midst of his third journey now. He's going through Galatia and Phrygia. He's strengthening the disciples. And then Luke brings the picture back now to Ephesus. He says in verse 24, a certain Jew named Apollos, born at Alexandria, an eloquent man and mighty in the scriptures, came to Ephesus. Well, we left the scene of Ephesus with some of the disciples and some of the Jews, rather, studying with Paul in the synagogue. Paul said, I'll come back to you at a future time if God wills. This is where Priscilla and Aquila were. Now, here's this man named Apollos. And we don't have very much said about Apollos. He became a very distinguished and successful preacher of the gospel. He's mentioned several times in the Bible, but nothing more is known of him than is stated right here in these passages by Luke. We have Apollos mentioned in 1 Corinthians 1 and 12, 1 Corinthians 3, 5 and 6, 1 Corinthians 4 and 6, and in Titus 3, verse 13. And certainly as we study our Bibles, Apollos is one of the prominent characters of the Bible. Well, he was born at Alexandria. Alexandria was a famous city in Egypt, founded by Alexander the Great, and there were a large number of Jews who did live there. Not only that, but he was an eloquent man. Alexandria was famous for its schools, and it's very likely that Apollos, in addition to his natural abilities, had enjoyed the benefits of these schools. He'd been a well-educated man. He was an eloquent man, and Luke said he's mighty in the Scriptures. That is, he's well-instructed, or he's able in the Old Testament. The foundation was thus laid for future usefulness in the Christian church because this man knew the Bible. He knew the Scriptures. At this time, they didn't have a New Testament, so it was the Old Testament that's referred to here when he stated as being mighty in the Scriptures. And, of course, the more we can know about the Old Testament as our foundation, the better we're going to be able to make a true application of what's stated in the New Testament. This man came to Ephesus. Verse 25 says, this man was instructed in the way of the Lord. The word way often refers to the doctrine. It means that he'd been correctly taught in regard to the Messiah. He knew what the Old Testament said about the Messiah. Yet his knowledge was imperfect. He didn't know some of the things that had happened after the Messiah had come. He didn't even know that Jesus was the true Messiah. He had correct views of the Messiah to come. Views which he had gotten from a study of the Old Testament. He was expecting a Savior that would be humble, that would be obscure, it would be a sacrifice. His view was not the same as the prevailing notion of the Jews. He'd heard of John, he'd embraced his doctrine, and he'd probably been baptized with reference to John. and John's teaching that the Messiah was to come. But it's clear that he'd not heard that Jesus was the Messiah. His views in regard to the coming of the Messiah, he were very correct up to the point that he had been adequately instructed. But so he was now ready in the proper state of mind to welcome the announcement that the Messiah had come. He was ready to learn about Jesus of Nazareth as the hope of the nation. He was a very prime candidate for the gospel at this time. Luke further describes him as being fervent in the spirit, that is, being zealous and ardent. This was a man who didn't just sit around and let others do the work, but he was wanting to get into it himself, and he was very zealous in teaching the things about the Bible. So he went about speaking and diligently teaching the things of the Lord. That is what the Old Testament had to say about the Lord, about the Messiah. But he knew only the baptism of John. His knowledge was imperfect. He did not know that Jesus had come. He did not know that Jesus was the Messiah. And there's a very good chance that Apollos had been baptized by John himself. We don't know this. Maybe just by one of John's followers. But he knew the baptism of John, the baptism in which he was expecting the Messiah to come, but he did not know that he had come. So verse 26 says, "And he began to speak boldly in the synagogue, whom when Aquila and Priscilla had heard, they took him unto them and expounded unto him the way of God more perfectly." He knew all the truth that he needed to know up to the point of the coming of the Messiah. He was well versed, he was prepared, and so they took him aside and expounded unto him, or taught him the way of God more perfectly. They filled in the things he didn't know. They taught him that the Messiah had already come. They taught him that Jesus was the Christ, and that he now could stop looking for him to come, but he'd already come. They filled in what he didn't know, and so they taught him the way of God more perfectly. And certainly any time our knowledge falls short of the full truth, even though what we do have is the truth, but we're short of having all the truth, then we can be further instructed. We can further be made to be more perfect in our area of knowledge, in our knowing of the truth. And that was the case of Apollos. He had some things to learn, and he did learn those things. He was taught them by Priscilla and Aquila. And so then he was able to become a true Christian, a true convert, because then his knowledge was improved to the point that he knew what to do. He knew that the Messiah had come. He knew that these prophecies had already been fulfilled. And he stopped looking for the Messiah and started following him. And so this man was a great find for the church. He was well prepared in his previous education to be one to be mighty in the teaching of the gospel. All he had to do was to learn it in the more perfect sense. And so he's going to become a great worker in the church. That brings our lesson to a close at this point. Till next time, this is N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friends.
This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine, this little light of mine. I'm gonna let it shine, every day I'll let my little light shine. Shine on, shine on, shine on, shine on.
Let your light shine on.
In that home we'll live forever, on the banks beside the river, with my loved ones there who left this world below. God will be there with our world.
Something very kind
which drew him closer to God, and is something which was rather surprising. In Psalms 126, 1 through 3, when the Lord turned again the captivity of Zion, we were like them that dream. Then was our mouth filled with laughter, and our tongue was singing. Then said they among the heathen, the Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us, whereof we are glad. So verse 18 of our chapter today says, And Abraham said unto God, Oh, that Ishmael might live before thee. Here Abraham prays for Ishmael. Not that Ishmael might be preferred before the son that Sarah should bear,